Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back in, everybody, to the early line right here on Sports Grid, hour number two. I'm Dane Martinez, and of course, with me every weekday morning is my man, Kevin Walsh. And Kev, we're going through these NBA games. If you haven't heard us talk about what happened last night or talk about Brooklyn, Toronto, or Utah, Denver, be sure to check out hour number one here of the early line. But as we chug ahead, Kev, the next game I want to talk about here in the NBA is Philly and Boston. Okay, and this is going to be interesting, okay, because Gordon Hayward is out. We know this. He has the ankle sprain. Unfortunately, he is going to miss, they're saying, the next 3 to 4 weeks, right? So that's going to be a big blow. I personally believe Marcus Smart will be inserted into the starting lineup. But could it be this Williams guy, Kev, because we know Philly is going big. And the question for Boston has always been, would they have the big-time bodies to kind of D that up? How do you think Boston responds with the Gordon Hayward injury? I could see them putting in Smart, or I can see them using this as an opportunity maybe to add a little bit of beef into their front court. How do you think they play it?
Look, so they're going to have to kind of keep some of these guys rotating anyway between Tice, Cantor, Bob Williams to try and, you know, take your chances at Embiid. So they're never, you know, ideally, you know, going five small would probably only be to try and close games. And I don't even know if that was really much of an option for them. But we got to look at this team. Man, they are thin. And, I was having a conversation with our guy Martino. Obviously follows this Celtics team very closely.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, like, I don't know why it's really hitting me just how thin this team is. He goes, why don't you listen to me? All right, you were about to get into a whole different argument now. but, like, you know, you look at it from this team, Jaylen Brown, 39 minutes, Kemba, 35, Tatum, you know, 41, Marcus Smart, 32. And that now, right, is with Gordon Hayward giving them 34 minutes. So Tice now has to go up probably to, you know, somewhere in the 30 range. Brad Wanamaker, Grant Williams, these guys are going to have to find themselves playing more minutes. Like, that, and that's kind of the thing. When I saw the Gordon Hayward news broke, I felt like a lot of people started to say, man, what a win this is for the Raptors. The Raptors, you know, Boston's really going to struggle to get past them. And I'm like, whoa. We got to wait. Hold on a second. Where did Philly go? I didn't see that this series had ended. Because I did not come away again from game number one saying, oh, yeah, Philly's got no chance. Oh, that was Philly's best punch. And it was far from Philly's best punch here. So You know, Dan, I've contemplated, how do I want to play this? Do I want to jump in on a series line? Do I want to jump, you know, what do I want to do here? I don't think I'm going to complicate it. I think I'm going to look to back Philly on the money line to win this game.
Okay, fair enough. And remember, there is that zigzag theory we talk about. This game was kind of nip and tuck. And then obviously the loss of Gordon Hayward does matter. The Boston Celtics are 4.5-point favorites in this one on the money line, as you're referencing. The C's are minus 188 with our partners and friends at FanDuel. The Sixers come back at plus 158. The total in this game is 215. I want to play a mini game with you, Kev. You know I like playing games. So I don't know if you've looked at it and have cheated already, but my question for you is very simple. We all know what Philly, it comes down to Joel Embiid, and we've been talking about like how he needs to dominate. Will he be shooting from the outside? Blah, blah, blah. All of that good stuff as it relates to Embiid, as we welcome in our radio audience from around the country, including out there on the West Coast with the mightier 1090. What's going on here? Get on the grid. Here's the game, Kev. What number would it have to be for Embiid points and rebounds prop for you to go under it today? Because he's got to dominate, right? That's what everybody's saying. He's saying he's got to be more dominant. He's got to be the best player. He knows this. He's saying it himself, right? And he does. And I believe that is the path to a Sixers win, some kind of ridiculously dominant performance from Joel Embiid. Nothing is out of the realm of possibility here for me. 30 and 20 is not out of the realm of possibility here for me for Embiid in game two. So that being said, you would take the over on points and rebounds for Embiid unless it was above blank.
So I've not looked ahead. I don't know what the actual number is, although if I remember, his game one numbers were 29.5 and 12.5, I think, were his game nine numbers, right?
So
I think that
was probably...
I think that means it'd be at 32.5. Again, I've not looked ahead here, but I think that means it would be at 32.5. Now, have they bumped it up here? Possibly. What's interesting to me, Dane, is he had 16 rebounds last game. Now, Gordon Hayward averages 6.7 rebounds. That's a good rebounder. But does this injury force them now to have a big out there more often on the floor to where
that's what I'm saying, because Williams gets the start almost.
Right. Like, does his rebounding numbers potentially, I don't want to say go down, but, you know, it might just have to be a steady level. I mean, 16 rebounds is a really good rebounding game. And I don't know if I'm going to look to bring the boards into this one. I just think he has but no choice to be more assertive. If that same 29.5 number sits there, I think that will probably be the direction that I look at and try and play that game over. Where would I play it under? I mean, look, if they posted a 35, it's just from a value perspective, you have to play it under.
Fair enough. His points total is 27.5 for today.
Oh.
I was asking you about points plus rebounds, and that's an interesting number also. 41.5 for points plus rebounds. Could you see 26 and 15 or 26 and 16? I could. And here's the thing. For Philly to win, I think Embiid is going to have to be the most dominant player on the court. We'll see if he can. We'll talk about it more when we come back right here on The Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey, everyone. It's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in, everybody, right here on the Early Line, giving you the edge on Sports Grid. Kev, I want to move on to the next game, but we have to talk about something. Your middle school math, brother man. What was the Embiid? The Embiid props?
Crushed it, dude. You heard me, man.
All right. Fair enough.
Over
rebounds prop, just so you know, for Joel Embiid.
What happened?
41 and a half, Kev. Do you like that? And do you like that points prop in the high 20s?
I mean, yeah, I like the points prop. I don't know if I really want to mess around with the rebounds. Maybe I will.
Okay.
Well, look, that's on you. You got to, you know, we've been doing this for a while now. You got
to
know
what
you think it's going to be. Yes, you should be able to assume off of our experience that I'm going to mess up the math problem.
Okay, fair enough. Remember you said that, okay? Because the next time when I do assume it, you're going to be like, what do you mean? Why are you not giving me credit? But okay, no problem. Absolutely.
Just don't make me do math in the middle of the show. That's how you...
All right, that is one way to do it if you want to guarantee. It's like abstinence, right? There's no way of having it be safe. You just got to avoid it altogether. Well, here's what I want to know for the last game that's coming up on the slate. Will they avoid the technical fouls altogether, Kev, because there was a lot of blowback about the SAWFT soft technicals on Kristaps Porzingis in game one. And listen, it was a different team after KP was gone, right? I know about Dallas in crunch time and how they can't get the job done in close games and close spots. All those statistics are out there. But honestly, Kev, this, as you say, is the most efficient offense in NBA history. They were winning at halftime of game one. I believe they had the Clippers legitimately on the ropes. Mm. And then KP gets ejected, and it was a completely different team, a completely different offense. I'm not saying Dallas would have grabbed game one, but it certainly would have been a different question.
Yeah, I mean, look, they had their lowest scoring quarter of the season in the quarter they tossed KP out of the game.
Right.
To say it changed the game would be a massive understatement. And even if you believe that the Clippers were still going to win this game, which they very well might have, and I believe were favored to still at the time, you're really like, it's pretty disingenuous to act as if though the ejection of Kristaps Porzingis did not change how that game was played from that point moving forward. I am, though, most interested in trying to figure out what we want to do with this total. Because as far as the side goes, I think there's strong arguments to be made on both sides. Again, you know, in a lot of ways, this was even, but now you expect Kristaps Porzingis to not be tossed out. But as far as this total goes, I mean, we got 228 while having a quarter that only saw 34 points. This number has gone down a point from where it was heading into game number one. I am a little bit torn here because there is an argument to be made that Luka Doncic's efficiency should go down, but the turnovers should as well go down.
Yeah,
to be
fair,
like
11.
Yeah, and 11, but that creates more transition opportunities for the Clips.
Sure.
So those are easy buckets. You have to think, right? With these two teams, neither one of them shot 35%. I am cheating there a little bit, 34.9 for
No math. We can round it up to 35.
True. But that's, you know, that's kind of, I think, a spot where you could expect better offensive performances from both these teams. Not that they had bad offensive performances, right? You know, both teams almost had 70 at the half, but I think a more consistent offensive flow is possible. So I might look to play this game over and then maybe figure out the side in game.
Yeah, you know, I want to ask you about KP, Kev, right? Because, you know, there's narratives here at play. I remember when we were talking about the Lakers in hour number one, right? You were like, hey, you know, if we keep seeing this, then maybe there is just something to that they can't handle the bubble. Right. Or adjust to the bubble. Sure. There's also been people who have been dramatically better in the bubble. And I would say Kristaps Porzingis is near the top of that list. On another show, we talked about the all bubble team, and I had KP on it because he averaged 10 more points a game in the bubble than not in the bubble, right? So which one is it? Because they got to set a prop bet somewhere, right? So I guess the question for you, Kev, is how much are they considering, right, the production previous to the pandemic, previous to the bubble? KP averaged 20 points before the bubble, 30 to 31 points in the bubble, right? A different KP, and we've talked about this. And then also, you know, he's got that output in game one from not having a full game. I don't know how that messes with the computer algorithm of his out points when you see a dud kind of in the game log. His point total today, Kev, is 24 and a half. I think we could see a focus, you know, chip on the shoulder KP that gets over that number.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You kind of talk about these comparisons between bubble and not bubble. And, you know, you can take out everything other than just the meetings with him and the Clippers. Pre-bubble, played him twice. He didn't score over 20 in either game. Okay. Played him in the bubble, gave him a 30 piece. You know, and funny enough, I had contemplated trying to go under with his number, and I didn't. And now, you know, it would have been a cheap win because he obviously gets tossed at 14. But was he on his way to go over? And I think that's a very, very good question there that you ask. Was he on his way over? Was he not? I think it's hard to tell. 14 points in 20 minutes. They could have had a big fourth quarter. Like, that's very, very difficult. I will say this, though. I would feel much more comfortable holding that over ticket than the under ticket.
Yeah, I think that is fair to say, right? And, you know, you're talking about this, which version of KP, and I think we're starting to get certain questions to come into focus, right? When, at what point do we believe that what we are seeing in the bubble is real, right? Like, when do we believe our own eyes, Kev, whether it leads to something like the Lakers shooting or whether it relates to some of these other guys, you know, like a Michael Porter Jr., a TJ Warren, a Kristaps Porzingis, you know? What is real? Do we believe that they're eventually going to perform to the back of the basketball card? Or is this so much of a different context, right, that this is now the control group and we have to go with what we are seeing here? I think it is very, very interesting. One other thing of note here for the Clips, I want to honestly ask you, will they be back at full strength with Montrezl Harrell back? You know, I know he's kind of like reporting back. I don't know his status with the quarantine. You also have Shamet, who was kind of back, but I don't know if he's going to be more in the flow, right? One of the benefits, I believe, of this Clippers team is their depth. Will they have it all back, Kev?
Yeah, I mean, these guys are supposed to be playing, but how effective they are. Shamet, 8 minutes, no points, minus 19.
Right.
Harrell, 15 minutes, 6 points, a minus seven. So, you know, that's obviously going to be the big question. Patrick Beverley was good in his 20 minutes of work. I'll mention this as well, just while we're talking props quickly. Kawhi scoring 29 while only being 1 of 7 from deep is noteworthy. Now, his prop was, I believe, 29 and a half in game number one. So that's obviously gut-wrenching. If you did play that over, maybe it was 28 and a half, though, and you'd be satisfied. But potentially looking at these Kawhi Leonard props, I'll double check what they've got that listed at over there at the FanDuel Sportsbook. Kawhi is 29 and a half again, juice to the over. But I think with fair reason, another market that I know you like to play and Gabe like to play, maybe just take over 2.5 threes for Kawhi Leonard and hope that regression can hit you in game number two.
That is interesting. Another prop that I look at is the triple-double machine that is Luka Doncic. If you think there is an occurrence of that today, you get it at plus 260, which is a better number, Kev, than what I believe it was for game one. I believe it was at like 235, 240 for game one, and you're getting a little bit more value. Luka Doncic plus 260 in this game. I'm not sure if it's necessarily because of the ankle or any other reason, but, you know, that is an interesting play right there. Those are the games we're going to see in the NBA as the playoffs move on. But we're in the playoffs in other sports, and we bring in our guy, the raging redhead, Cam Stewart, to talk about that when we come back. The NHL playoffs are in full swing. And I guess, depending on how you look at it, we've entered the playoffs in golf as well. The FedEx Championship points are on and popping. We'll talk about what that means as a tournament. We'll tee off tomorrow, the Northern Trust. So we bring in Cam to give us all the leans we need. That's what we do, give you the edge on Sports Grid. And we'll do that right after the news break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Welcome back in, everybody. We thank them, of course, for all the news and notes catching up here on the grid. We also welcome back our radio audience, including the mightier 1090 down there in Southern California. Thanks for waking up very early with us here on the early line. We've been talking about all these sports going into their playoffs, but we would be remiss if we didn't spend a couple of minutes talking about the frozen rubber as well. And so we bring in our guy, Cam Stewart, like we do on Wednesdays. Thanks for waking up early with us, Cam. How you feeling?
I'm doing pretty good, guys. I got to tell you, the Islanders cost me a nice little late parlay there. I decided to add them and went against, I was thinking sweep, just the way they've dominated. But these are really hard games to distinguish. What's the motivation when you're down 3-0?
Right.
I will say this about hockey players. These guys don't tap out. That's the thing. Sometimes, in the NBA, you're down 3-0. It's like, let's just get the hell out of here. These guys really showed pride. Like the Capitals were down 2-0 early in that game. They could have packed it in, but they came back, they grinded, and I got to give them a lot of credit, guys. Just looking at the hockey board today, too, very difficult to predict. Like, the way Philadelphia beat Montreal, just absolutely, like, suffocating them, breaking their will. Carter Hart, back-to-back shutouts. Like, are the Canadians going to suck it up? Are they going to show up today, or is Philadelphia just going to put the final squeeze on these guys? Tampa Bay, Columbus, the same thing. Columbus looked like they had the edge in play. Tampa Bay's getting it done. I'll tell you one thing, probably Colorado's the best bet on the board, but they're also the chalkiest bet on the board, right? They absolutely demolished the Desert Dogs in the last game, but it's a very, very tough board, guys, and there's 5 games today, too, so it's going to be absolutely wild, a lot of elimination games, but yeah, I'm probably going to be doing a lot of, like our boy Gamblu says, parlay playing pukes. I don't want to be that guy, but it's hard to lay the juice, and I try to put turn minuses into pluses, guys, but it is a very, very difficult day on ice. Tread light.
Yeah, absolutely. With these 5 games, you got to hope none of them go 5 overtimes to upset the apple cart. I do, Cam, I love you, but I got to push back on something you said when you said hockey players don't quit. I submit to you the curious case of Tuukka Rask, right? So, like, did he in fact quit? Say they don't tap out, there's a lot of people who are saying that's exactly what he did. And I was talking with Gabe on In Game Live when this happened. So the way he was responding to this, right? And I was telling him, listen, when I talked to you about him like self-reporting the sniffles right on that app, I was like, I'm wondering if his heart is really in it all the way from then. But here's what I want to ask you, okay? Because the Bruins are up 3-1. They're probably still going to get this done. They are favored to close out Carolina today. And we know Halak is a legitimate goaltender, okay? I know that. But with, in other sports, let's say, right, that I'm more familiar with, when you have a platoon player that's forced into everyday duty, or you have a backup in football, they rally around him for a little while. But then over time, they get exposed a little bit. Are the Bruins in danger with that with Halak, or is he someone that can hold up even as the Bruins progress into the next round, which it looks like they may be able to do today?
Yeah, here's the thing on Rask. You know, I didn't like his attitude from the get-go. This is the best thing that happened to the Boston Bruins. Jaro Halak is a great goaltender. He is not a 1B. He's a starting goaltender. They basically had two starting goaltenders in Boston. And you know what? They're going to rally behind this guy. Did you guys see the third period of that game? I was on Carolina. These guys are cruising with a 2-0 lead, feeling good about themselves. Boston scores a hardworking first goal, and they demolish Carolina. I will say this. In the third period, that was the best period of hockey I've ever seen by a team pre-COVID, during COVID, bubble. What the Bruins did, the way they played in speed and passion, they destroyed Carolina. I think they actually ripped their heart out and took their will. Halak, the best thing that happened to Boston, Dane, I'm telling you, Kev, this guy wants to be there. Tuukka Rask was already halfway out. Oh, I want to go see my family, whatever. Then go see your family. That's fine. Other guys have families. Other guys have kids. You want to leave? Go leave. We have a guy right now who wants to play, and they're not afraid. I don't think there's going to be any drop-off in talent. To be honest with you, I think Tuukka Rask lets in more soft goals. The only thing that Halak did, he made one mistake playing the puck, and it cost him on a play. And after that, he stood on his head, and his player, I heard even the guy say, he's like, listen, man, we got you. Don't worry about it. That was one bad mistake.
Right.
We're in this. They're going to rally around him, man. And I'll tell you, Boston is a scary looking team right now. These guys just don't go away. I was wrong about this series. I thought Carolina, younger, they looked like they were faster, but they're just getting outworked. Boston is a professional hockey team, right, Kev? The way we talk about the Oakland A's when we're doing that stuff, that's what Boston does. They show up, they beat you down, they work harder than you, and they have veterans. They don't care what they've done. They want more, more, more. You know, that's the thing. Carolina's got a lot of work to do if they want to be in Boston's league.
Yeah, you got to give the Bruins credit. I want to ask you about Flyers Canadians from a couple of angles here, but the main one that just stands out to me, and it's so unique that hockey has decided to go this route with back-to-back playoff games. The NBA would never consider that.
Like, in fact, no.
You know what I mean? Like, the NBA, they're like, oh, wow, no. Only one day off? Like, interesting. And here in hockey, they're like, double them up, who cares? How have you found teams performing on these second legs of back-to-back, and is there anything you can take from that into this game?
Excellent question there, Kev. I would say this, play on the defensive side, mental game is sloppier. So that will lead to chances, penalties, which would lead to more overs. That's what I would look at in these type of situations. Also, elimination games, some coaches go wild. They might pull the goalie when they're down 2 goals with 6-7 minutes left in the game. Empty net or empty net. What do you care? You're going to lose. You're leaving the bubble, right? The party's over. So it doesn't matter if you lose 7-2 or 5-2. It really doesn't matter. But I will say this. These guys are mentally strong, but hockey, playoff hockey, is based on systems and space. And when you're not all there mentally, when you're a little bit foggy or tired, what do? You make mistakes. You take penalties. You do stupid things. You clear the puck over. You know what? I've noticed, too, in those back-to-backs, delay of game penalties. Like a goalie, you know, flipping it. Like, instead of getting it off the boards, a little bit lazy, too high. Thing goes in there, doesn't hit anybody. 2 minutes, delay a game, power play. The little mental lapses and breakdowns are something that I look at in these games. It's really hard, though, guys. Like, as I said with the Capitals, they could have tapped out, but they won. Like, what do we get from Montreal today? Are they ready to rock and to make this a 6-game series there? It's very, very difficult.
Hey, Cam, you know, I want to ask you something to try to get an edge here. That's what we do on Sports Grid. Like in basketball, for example, I'm talking with Kevin, right? We saw the Lakers and the Blazers, and I'm asking him about the Lakers and their kind of poor shooting, right? And my question for Kevin in this situation is, like, is it the bubble? Is it real, or will it kind of regress back to the mean the way we think about with the Lakers or these other teams? So I want to ask you in hockey, Cam, are there any teams that have been like overperforming in the bubble? You know, because I believe in it. I believe that what we're seeing in the bubble, I can, you know, trust in, I can put my money behind, right? And so are there any teams like that, Cam, that are overperforming, doing well in the bubble? Any trends you're seeing that maybe some people don't believe are sustainable, but if I believe that what I'm seeing in the bubble is real, I want to get and ride with? Who's playing well in the bubble that may be overperforming their odds and generating some value?
I would say earlier it was the Vancouver Canucks. They were a team that were really, really good in the first couple of games. But St. Louis is they're the defending Cup Stanley. They're the Stanley Cup champions, guys. They're not going away without a fight. But they did lose Tarasenko. He's got a repaired shoulder. He had to go back to St. Louis to take a look at that thing. He's going to be a big loss to them. Dane, don't quit on the Islanders. They're going to beat the Capitals the next game. I was wrong there. The Capitals just showed up. The Islanders understand with Barry Trotz, too. Remember his attitude? I love the bubble. I wish everything was the bubble. You know, right. That's the attitude that you have to have in the bubble. You can't think, oh, there's no fans. Teams, I would say, with a harder work ethic and less skill set would tend to thrive in the bubble a lot more. Actually, in Philadelphia is another team that doesn't mind the bubble because they're not flashy. Mm. What do? They're right. A defensive team. They grind
it
you
travels,
to death.
Right? Tampa That's Bay, what travels,
is,
right?
Tampa Bay is a high-flying team. They know they'll make stupid mistakes, but they'll score wicked goals. Like when you talk skill set, they're the best. But the Flyers just roll out four lines. They pound you to death like a snake. You know, basically they eat you. Right. They suffocate you. Yeah,
that's more
breaking
dependable,
your ribs.
Right?
I'm going to eat you.
On the dark
that's what they've done to Montreal. Montreal is one of those teams, like they're fast, like a water bug. And Philadelphia is like, okay, well, me and Gabe talked about it. Wow, Montreal, you're fast, but you're not doing anything. You're skating around. Right. We have our lanes. We're not scared of you. And the thing is, the defensemen there can also pinch because they have Carter Hart back there. The Flyers' MO for years, they've had horrible goaltending. These guys sucked. And now they have a reliable tender. When you're a defenseman, you just go, oh, thank you, my friend. Now I can pinch in here. Now I don't have to worry on a two-on-one. I can kind of slide down. Cut the angle. You got the other half of the net. I'm not going to panic. When you have a lousy goaltender, defensemen make a lot more mistakes. They do, you know what I mean? They don't trust their goaltender and they get out of position. So I would say the teams that is benefiting the Flyers right now, the Islanders, and what can you say? And the Canucks. I will come back to the Canucks tonight against St. Louis. I think they understand what they need to do. Every game in the series has been close. They're getting a quarter on FanDuel. That's good enough for me. These are real tight games, and I understand that even though St. Louis won two straight, I think Vancouver comes out guns a-blazing tonight. That's a dog that I would take.
Cam, we got one more game on this slate that we haven't gotten to yet, and the Lightning are now a game away from getting their redemption back. And I'm sure that, you know, obviously the overtime period was worrying, then they lose game number two here, but they've now rattled off two in a row. How do you feel about the Lightning against the Blue Jackets in the noon game?
I like the Lightning. I don't like the price. The thing about the Lightning is they're a better team than Columbus. Columbus has been fantastic too. Very, very smart hockey team. Well coached, always in position, but skill is overriding the work ethic of Columbus right now. And the thing about Tampa Bay is too, they have a good goaltender. I know Corpusello has been the story of the playoffs, but Vasilevsky is one of the best goaltenders. The guy's up for the Vezina. So I would say this about Tampa Bay, though. Their defense, there's a couple guys back there that, you know, over a long series, like against Boston, I'd be very worried. Like Zach Bogosian, he's a nice guy. I've interviewed him before, but he's an older guy with a lot of injuries. I'm not sure he could keep up this level. Guys, I'm going to tell you, I think Tampa Bay will get it done. I worry about them moving forward, though. I think they should be able to take care of business today. But against a team like Boston and Philadelphia, I really worry about Tampa Bay. You know, I'm going to say this. They're still overrated, in my opinion.
And there you go, Cam, because you're talking about these more blue collar, right? Just set in their ways, do their thing, as opposed to the flashy teams that may be a little soft on the back end defensively. When we come back, though, Cam, we're going to turn our attention to golf, the FedEx Championship. Those points, you're hot on that. We got to get your leans there. We'll do that when we come back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back in, everybody, to the early line right here on Sports Grid, giving you the edge. I'm Dane Martinez. I got my main man, Kevin Walsh, and we continue to be joined by our guy, Cam Stewart. We were talking a little bit of pucks, but every Wednesday, Cam is, you know, nice enough to join the show as we talk about the PGA tournament on the horizon. And so, Cam, as we dive in here, I got to ask you first a big picture question. There are some weeks on the PGA schedule where we're like, oh, a major's coming up. These guys might be trying to fine-tune their game instead of actually win the tournament for the week. I want to ask you, because this tournament that starts also kicks off, I believe, the FedEx like championship kind of, you know, elimination chamber, shall we say, right? Where they cut off and cut off. Are there any differences? Might any of the golfers play it differently this week because maybe they know they're right beyond the cut line or they know they're safe? Might some players have to, like, quote unquote, go for it when others could play more conservative? And if that's the case, could that factor into things like matchup bets that you make, top 20 bets you make to make the cut, and those other kind of ancillary bets that you like to make on a tournament? I'm just wondering if the overarching factor of the FedEx and the playoffs and those points and the way it goes down would change anything in any of your view for this specific tournament this weekend.
Yeah, this is interesting. So right now, guys, this is a 3-week showdown, right? The winner, the total purse is $60 million. The winner gets $15 million. I could tell you, next to winning majors, what do golf guys like? They like partying. They like giving their wives
$15 million.
They like caviar. They like making love on the yacht. They like a good life. Let's live the good life, like the Get Along Gang, Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler and their crew, girls in bikinis. Hey, let's yacht. But I will say this, you, for these guys, one top 125, for next week, you have to be in the top 70. So this is the way the FedEx Cup works. 3 weeks, top 125 in money play this week. They whittle it down to 70. Final week, top 30 tour championship. Winner gets 15 mil, purse is 60 million. And also in the final event, whoever leads the FedEx Cup starts with a lead. So let's just say, for example, Justin Thomas, he'll start at minus six, then he'll go minus four. Like, do you understand? It's
an aggregate game, right?
I'm not going to get into the whole system, how they rank everybody, because we'll be here for 2 days. But that's basically the way it works, Dane. So, yes, I will say this. Guys who are outside the top 100 right now, they understand they need a good week this week. So they will take more chances. They will, you know, go for par fives and maybe get into danger and stuff like that. Right. It's like, basically, it's all or nothing. The guys inside, like, take a look at Justin Thomas, DeChambeau, all these guys. They're just going to play their game, right? They've locked up the top 30 at Eastlake, where the tour championship is. So basically, you have these mid-tier guys between, like, you know, 35 and 70. These guys want to do some things. The guys on the outside looking in, the 100s to 125s, these guys are going to have to play more aggressive golf, whereas I think the top 15 and 20 guys, they're like, hey, I'm home and cool. I got enough FedEx Cup points. Let's just make more money, throw it on the pile, and hopefully, you know, play well and get the $15 million. Because these guys, man, imagine that. You win the FedEx Cup, you get $15 million. These guys, the top guys are already loaded. There's a lot of money in this stuff, and guys love money. So this is an interesting week. TPC Boston, it's also a course that, if you look at the past history, I wouldn't say it's a bomber's course, but it's very important, guys. Five par fours are over 460 yards. So if you're a guy who's a small ball hitter, a medium ball hitter, that's tough going in there with that kind of distance. That's very, so I do look at guys who are a little bit better on fairways, hit and distance. That's what you need off the tee. Obviously every week putting is a big factor. And I'll tell you this, guys, sorry about last week. If I gave you Jim Herman, the Herminator.
Yeah, really.
You guys should be a bronze statue of me. Like, Jim Herman looks like the club pro. That, hey, Jim, how you doing? You want to go out and play a cash game? I'm looking at this guy going, he was so nervous. He almost swallowed the cap on the water when he was sitting there waiting for Billy Horschel to finish up on 18. Like, he spilled it all over himself. It's crazy. Like, he's just thinking, wow, man, I just won like over $1 million here. My life's great. But I will say this, Dane, to your earlier point, guys outside the top 100, they are going to take risks. So there's going to be blow up rounds. Some guys are really going to go for it, and there's going to be a lot of triples and quads on the card. I don't think it's going to happen with the big guys, but it will happen with the guys fighting to get in next week for the top 70 to play.
So, Camden, let me ask you about the guy I always ask you about here, in Brooks Koepka.
Oh, Brooks Koepka?
You've told me. Yeah, of course. Because here's the thing.
I love you. Like, you love the Yankees and your dad loves the Flyers. You're going to give me a Brooks Koepka update this week. Okay, buddy. Fire away, Koepka.
Well, here's the thing. The thing I've asked you, right, week in, week out, I'm like, man, like every week I get to ask you about Brooks. The guy never takes off. And you've explained he needs to perform well because he's so far behind when it comes to the FedEx. So I look at him for the Northern Trust. He's, you know, further down the board, I would say, than he usually is at 33-1. He needs a big week, but are you too worried that that then means he's going to push and take too many chances and it could be bad? Or a determined Brooks Koepka is usually a golfer people like to back. So what do you think about him here at this 33-1 price?
I really like the price. I hate his form. I'm also not going to bet Kevin when we have other guys there. I'm not willing, from what I've seen with him, I'm not willing to bet him even at that price. That's the thing. Sometimes we have to look at the price and go, yeah, there's a reason for that. Brooks Koepka, I've never seen him play this poorly. There is something wrong with Brooks Koepka right now. I don't know what the injury's lingering. He's spraying the ball off the tee like I've never seen. Like, he could still strike it and he can get out of danger, but his accuracy has been awful. And that's the one thing. He could hit fairways blindfolded most of the time. So it is a big concern. Also, on the greens, the guy used to be money from like 15 feet. He's missing putts. There's too many other guys. I'm not going to say I'm going to jump all over him and fade him, because this guy has had the tendency to come back when people count him out, but he will not be bet by me. And if I see a matchup bet that I like with a guy, I will attack Brooks Koepka. But Kev, you're right. You're usually getting this guy at 18, 20. You're getting him at 33. There's a reason for it, too. His form blows. Like, he does not look like the same golfer right now. It's shocking.
Hey, Cam, you know, you talk about someone who's in bad form and Brooks Koepka and the number may be the only incentive there to bet him. I hate bad numbers, especially big minus numbers. Mm-hmm. But is there any more sure thing right now than Colin Morikawa? You know, so like the idea of
him.
Even something like Morikawa, like, honestly, I'm not going to do this. Okay, Cam, I understand. But minus 600 for Morikawa to make the cut. He's won more majors than missed cuts. He's won more tournaments than missed cuts, right? Like, he's not one of these guys that's going to completely blow up. I know it's crazy. I know it's too much juice, but talk to me about this role that Morikawa's on in his rookie year.
Here's the thing. Colin Morikawa, when he came out, he's the guy that no one talked about. Everyone talked about Matthew Wolf, and they talked about all the good other younger players. Victor Hovland. It was all the Oklahoma State guys, right? Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolf. Colin Morikawa, in my opinion, is better than both of them. But I will say this, Dane. Be careful this week. Even a young guy off the win, feeling good about himself.
Right.
That is a high wire dance act that I do. You know what I mean? I feel like you're going over Niagara Falls. You've done it every time, but the wind's picking up. I don't know. I don't know how he's going to respond. And the thing is, in this course, this is also a thing he's never done before. Remember, guys, a rookie. He hasn't played in the FedEx Cup yet. I don't think he's going to be intimidated. The guy won a major, but I'm saying at that price, I don't even have Colin Morikawa in my six pack this week. I love him as a player. One of my favorites. And you guys know, since we've been doing the golf, I bet him almost every week, even before the major, and take him live a lot of the time.
Right.
But I would say be cautiously optimistic this week with him. I just think it's a little bit dangerous coming off the win. We'll see. You know what I mean? I just don't see him there. I can see him playing okay, but I don't think he's going to be on the final page of the leaderboard on Sunday.
So, Cam, every single week that we do this, I ask you about Koepka as if he's the biggest star in the world. But we actually do have the biggest star in the world here, a couple notches below him. Tiger's at 35-1, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you what you think about Big Cat heading into this weekend.
Here's the thing about Tiger Woods. To me, everything boils down to the Masters. He has everything under control, right? Like, he'll play well in the FedEx Cup, but I'm not betting him. Will he do well? Okay. Will his back hold up? Maybe. It's just, there are so many. This is the best of the best, right? And Tiger Woods can play Augusta blindfolded. The FedEx Cup, does he care about it? Yes. But on his priority list, majors are more important. A lot of these other guys, they know, hey, man, you know, I don't have the game for the Masters. Tiger has a goal. Beat Jack Nicklaus, more records, majors. He's already got all the money in the world. He's got his endorsements back. This is the thing. He'll play well. I think if you're going to look at him, maybe in the Tour Championship in the top 30, this is something that Tiger Woods has to do. He does have to play well, though, because remember, guys, he takes a lot of time off, too. But even the course history there, there's other guys that I like a hell of a lot more than him that have consistent top 10s here at TPC Boston. So, Kevin, I'm going to tell you something. If you see, like, if I had I'm going to throw this out there, a Bryson DeChambeau-Tiger Woods matchup bet, I would smash DeChambeau. That's my opinion. I know I was wrong before. I gave you guys that damn Brooks Koepka Sunday collapse job, Kev. I felt bad about that. And I didn't give you guys Mr. Herman last week, the Herminator. Like, my buddy bet Jim Herman live on Sunday. I told him, I go, you should like get an award for that. Like, how the hell do you bet Jim Herman?
Absolutely. But that's okay, Cam. We go back to the well with you. It is all good. You talk about Tiger Woods. He's got it all. He's got the money. He's got the championships. He's even won a tournament as a caddy for his child over the weekend. So we give props for that. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? So, okay. We all know, though, Cam, you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning. And it is 5 o'clock somewhere right now. Let's crack open the six pack for this first event of the FedEx playoffs. Who you got this week?
Great motto, Dane. Too bad I got shows and updates in the afternoon. It sounds like a great plan today to watch basketball and hockey. But we're going to start things off with Jason Day. This is a guy that's really trending in the right direction. And I look at the price, 23-1. I think that's fantastic. Guys, my favorite pick this week. If you said you have one guy to bet on, it's Patrick Reed at 28-1. He is my favorite pick on the board. I think you guys should play him in top 20s. He's also won here before. He is trending. His game is perfect. 28-1. Watch out for Patrick Reed. I think he's got a great chance to win. Then we're going to go with Adam Scott, another guy that's had success on this track. Great track record. Adam Scott here. Guy has a win here. Six top 10s at this course. Are you kidding me? They say horses for courses. Give me Adam Scott at 40. Now we're going to dig a little bit deeper. Actually, I was surprised. Somebody on FanDuel smashed this because when I looked before, he was 60. It's not the coyote. It's the wolf. Matthew Wolf. 41-1. I don't know who's hitting this in Jersey, but this guy's got a lot of money to knock that odd down to 41. I like it. Mm-hmm. Him. Top 10 last week. That's good enough for us. Mm. We had him in the portfolio, top 10 and 20, 50-1. And Tyrell Hatton, the fiery Brit, at 50-1 as well. I'm not taking any like 100-1s, but I have a lot of guys in the mid-range this week. Because the thing is, the best of the world are playing. It's going to be really hard to beat the top guys. And if you guys want to play chalk, I would bet two guys. If you gave me Dane, you and Kev drank four of my beers and I only got two left. I'm not mad at you. I would take Bryson DeChambeau at 12-1 and Patrick Reed at 28. Those are my two favorite picks. I'm going to wait to bet DeChambeau live because I'll tell you something. Say he's four or five shots back. You're going to get a better number than 12-1, right? That's a little bit too chalky for me. We will deal with that on the weekend live.
I like it, Cam. I do want to quickly, before we let you go, I got to ask about the three-ball matchups. And there's just one that I've identified because we mentioned very rarely they actually throw
every week, Cam,
minus
I love
price.
You. Three balls and
that's touchdown. Right.
That's
it. And we'll do it again tonight on In-Game Live. Quickly, we've got 20 seconds, though. Jason Day at minus 120 against Adam Hadwin and Brendan Steele. Is that a good price?
Yes. Yes, yes, awesome. Yes. I love that. And I would lay the
thank you. Thanks a lot, Kev, for spending a couple of minutes with us. You like Patrick Reed. If you want to be more conservative, he's plus 125 to finish in the top 20 this week. Thanks for giving us all the nuggets. We tie a nice, neat little bow with this episode of The Early Line after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back in, everybody, right here onto The Early Line, where we give you the edge, all while putting the fun in functional sports content. Keep it locked all day long. The morning after is up next, and so we bring in our guy, Jared Smith, here for a couple of minutes. And Jared, I was watching the morning after yesterday. I know you guys were talking about the Fernando Tatis, the Grand Slam, the 3-0. We didn't get a chance to talk much about it, or baseball for that matter, today. I want to ask you a question. Not about the unwritten rules of baseball, okay? Let me make that clear. If the kid gets a pitch that he thinks he can hit yard, go ahead. I got that. I have a different issue with it, and it's a small issue, but it came out that he did, in fact, get the take sign from his manager, right? And then he, you know, didn't follow the sign. So I'm not talking about like, oh, should just swing 3-0 and all that. To me, it's also the idea of like, hey, if the guy calls the play, you go with the play. Like if someone doesn't do the hit and run or doesn't do the steal when they're supposed to, not the idea of, oh, the unwritten rules of baseball and the bat flip and all that stuff. But what about the fact that he didn't listen to the manager?
Yeah, that bothers me a lot more than him swinging 3-0. I agree. I mean, I think if your manager says don't do something,
gave him the take sign, you know,
shouldn't do it. I don't know if, and I haven't watched enough Padres games to know this, but I don't know what kind of, you know, aggression. I think it's Andy Green has as the Padres manager. If that's a normal thing, if usually, because sometimes guys, and you know this, Dane, sometimes guys just always have the green light, regardless.
Right, you can fault the strategy, right? Like reasonable people can disagree on
the Padres strategy.
Usually,
I don't know if that's abnormal. Whereas Tatis usually has the green light, but he was given the take sign here, and he just didn't listen. Or he always has the green light, and there was just a mix up. I don't know, but I agree. If the manager gives him the take sign, he should have taken a pitch.
No, he shouldn't have. He was wrong. They should fire the manager. That's preposterous. He did last night. He should be celebrating.
His walk-up song last night?
He should. After the game, he should have been like, hey, I gave him the take sign, but hey, it's Fernando Tatis Jr. So,
he should be like, I'm the manager now. This guy's gone.
I am the captain now.
All that much more going on in the morning after. They'll talk about it more after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.